Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Talk with Tenny. I'd like to say that today is going to be a show where we're focusing some of the time on remembering all of the soldiers and veterans who have died while serving, and to focus on issues of what is happening in the Veterans Administration and all of the people who are struggling and veterans struggling coming back, and thank you for your service if you're listening. If you'd like to call in, the area code is area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. I'd like to just at the beginning just make a couple of reminders about different events coming up. On June 19th in Brooklyn, New York, in front of Kings County Hospital Center Psychiatric Emergency Room, we will be hosting the 6th annual demonstration and vigil in remembrance of Esmond Green, who was murdered there in 2008. July 13th at 6 p.m. to July 16th at 6 p.m., the Mental Patients Liberation Alliance will be hosting the Alliance's 34th annual Bastille Days demonstration and celebration and vigil. We will be sitting vigil for 72 hours, which is in New York State how long, and many places around the country, 72 hours is how long that you can be detained, evaluated, and treated in a determination of whether or not you will be institutionalized or not. So we sit for 72 hours and expand our organizing activities to be able to call attention to human rights violations that are carried out through state-sponsored organized psychiatry and speak out against psychiatric oppression. I want to thank everybody who's been calling in and listening and communicating with me. I really appreciate the feedback that I'm getting. And I know some of you may be concerned about calling in, being in a public forum, and I appreciate that. So if you have anything that you'd like to ever have me address, please call me on the Talk with Tenny tip line at area code 718-273-8708. That is a 24-hour phone that is available if you have a news tip, if you know of a human rights violation or a death that you think should be investigated, or if you have a show idea. Call me and we will talk about getting something together and taking some action and trying to get whatever your information is investigated through a state. Also, July 24th through July 27th in Connecticut will be the 2014 Creative Revolution Conference hosted by Mind Freedom International. And Mind Freedom International can be reached at www.mindfreedom.org. If you'd like to be involved in the organizing for the 34th annual Bastille Days vigil, please contact the Alliance at 800-654-7227, or you can contact me about that as well. If you'd like to call in and talk, the lines are open. Area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. So let me tell you a little bit about what I've found out in recent times. As anybody who's watching the news will know that the Veterans Administration is currently being investigated for keeping fraudulent documentation of waiting lists, and in the medical healthcare arena, people are dying because they're being denied treatment, or the treatment is being delayed, and there really is quite a scandal going on with the double record keeping of secret waiting lists prior to being put on an actual waiting list because of bonuses people would get for keeping numbers low and keeping the waiting list numbers low. An additional secret waiting list have been created in various places, it seems, which is very disturbing. And so that in itself, if people aren't getting just medical care and people being veterans, people who have put their life on their line to go fight for the country, if this is how it is that veterans are being treated, the rest of us really need to watch out, because it's coming. So I looked at the the Veterans Administration, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs website by Googling. I think I Googled Veterans Administration Mental Health. And so I got this page called gethelp.asp. So it's the www.mentalhealth.va.gov/gethelp ASP pound tabs dash four. I'll post the link. And so it says, the very first thing that it says, get help. And then there are several tabs. Get help now, program locators, treatment info, screening tools, VA benefits and claims. So get help now. If you are in crisis, please call 911, go to your nearest emergency room, or call the Veterans Crisis Line, available 24/7 at 1-800-273-8255, Spanish Espanol 888-628-9454. Veterans, press 1 after you call. You can also chat live online with a crisis counselor 24/7 by visiting the Veterans Crisis Line website. So there's an attempt to have some kind of supports put in place for people who may be experiencing extreme emotional stress. So things that I will never know, things that the majority of us who have never been to war will never know or ever understand, and how one can possibly be okay with the realities of war. I guess is another question that needs to be addressed somehow or some way. You know, when veterans talk about the extreme emotional experiences they have after coming back, survivor's guilt is a lot of what is often discussed about, of why is that person alive? Why did they get out? Why did... things that people are coming back with and the things that they've seen and experienced and had to do, it's not a disorder. Post-traumatic stress is not a disorder. And George Bush, of all people, George W., has actually really been pushing this as of late. If you'd like to call in, the area code is area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. So I looked at treatment info that is available under this link, and under that there's the guide for VA mental health services for veterans and families. And then there's finding and choosing a therapist fact sheet. And then the third is the summary of VA treatment programs for substance use problems. And there was another tab that I was trying to get to. Just bear with me here for a second. Substance use. The Guide to Mental Health for Veterans. It was on one of their tabs where it explains the programs that they had available. And so now I'm a little struggling trying to find it. Treatment Settings and Services is the name of the tab, and that is under, that is under the Guiding Principles, About VA Mental Health, and on the page is the Guiding Principles, which include focus on recovery, coordinated care for the whole person, mental health treatment and primary care, mental health treatment coordinator, around-the-clock service, care that is sensitive to gender and cultural issues, care close to home, evidence-based treatment, and family and couple services. And so those are their overarching guiding principles. And when you look under treatment settings and services, it says, the VA offers a range of treatments and services to improve the mental health of veterans. VA offers treatments in a variety of settings, including short-term inpatient care, outpatient care in psychosocial rehabilitation and recovery centers, regular outpatient care, which may include telemedicine services, residential rehabilitation treatment programs, primary care, residential care, and supported work settings. For any of you who may not know what telemedicine services is, that is when you are evaluated and treated via a video chat or maybe even a telephone, and somebody, there isn't a doctor standing immediately in front of you. And then the VA's website goes on to say that examples of common mental health treatments for veterans include treatments for depression, substance use, post-traumatic stress, and serious mental illnesses such as schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, and bipolar disorder. So if we look under the tab for treatment for depression and anxiety, the very first type of mental health treatment that is available is antidepressant medications, anti-anxiety medications, and medications to improve sleep and other problems. They do also list talk therapies, also called psychotherapies. I'm sorry, I'm reading off their blog. We have a caller. If you'd like to talk, please do so. Okay, I will.
Laura.
Oh, hi.
Lauren, this is Yvonne. So you were rattling off the list of what the Veterans Administration claims they offer.
Yeah, I'm reading off their webpage because I'm going to eventually get to the screening that I took, and I'll talk about that. But I was talking about the treatments that they say they offer and the types of services they say they offer. And the very first one on the list for depression and anxiety were medications. The list for substance use disorders are medications. And the treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder is medications. And the treatment for serious mental illnesses are medications. And the types and amounts of medications that are used are keep on growing as you go along.
On the CBS did a news story, and I'm not that much of a fan of CBS, but they've done several news stories on the VA, and they did one several months ago where they talked about veterans who were taking painkillers and psychiatric medication, and they were taking them as prescribed, and they were dying.
Yes, I looked at the was that the 60 Minutes?
Yes, that was 60 Minutes. It was a widow, I don't know, it was a soldier or airman, but it was a serviceman, ex-serviceman, and he took the medication as prescribed, and they've had many instances of this. This is not something that's isolated. I think that the VA has problems for decades, but just from you listing those things, clearly it's like they are over-relying on medications. And, you know, with the Iraqi and Afghanistan
Veterans who are calling home, yes, that's the link you sent me, and I really appreciated it. And so I watched, I took down some notes. So they're saying that 2 million veterans from Iran and Afghanistan are going to be coming home, and one out of every five have post-traumatic stress. And I don't see how after whatever, the horrors that veterans have to, in war, how could you not have some kind of resulting stress from war? So one out of five, so one of the statistics was horrifying to me around the painkillers and the deaths. The death rate, they said that the vets from narcotics prescribed painkillers are more than twice the national average for veterans and for non-veterans, and there's a ton of money in this, of course, and they are we're addressing in that the over medication of people and in different kinds of painkillers. It rose 270% in the rate of medicating, and then the opiates wind up causing other kinds of, cognitive confusion and feelings of sadness and such.
I hope that some veterans are listening in. We found this out from a previous broadcast that people sometimes like to listen before they talk, but I had forwarded this on to several Facebook veteran organizations and to the Office of VA in Washington, at least. It's surprising that they're using all that medication with the fact coming out that they're not actually seeing people. They have to have a secret list because they don't have capacity. I think this week that they made an announcement that they were going to allow the veterans to get private services elsewhere. It was another 60 Minutes report, and it's available online. They were touting this kind of relived experience of trauma that they claim is so great. And I just wonder how many people they're able to take advantage of it. And at the same time, I know that many people have been fighting. I know I have been trying to get into VA to do some other peer programs that have been very successful, trauma programs, but it seems as though it's very difficult to go to the VA to do anything, even if you're not going to ask for money.
Right, just on a volunteer basis. And I know that there's a lot of efforts that are being done. Paula Kaplan, for example, has the When Jane and Johnny Come Marching Home activities going on, and I just had that website up, and I'm trying to find it more clearly. And different kinds of supports of veteran to veteran, but they're not widely available, and certainly I don't see any information about the dangers of these drugs up front, of where they're being listed off. So I think the access, access denied, either access delayed or denied, is got to be part of the problem, and then the prescriptions only take 15 minutes to write, if that, and so they don't have to really get into the issues that people are struggling with, which are never going to be fixed by the drugs.
We see this, it's just like the California case. No matter where you are in the United States, every so many weeks, and it may be happening more frequently than that, we just don't see it on the news, we see where a veteran or a serviceman goes off.
Right.
And, they either have violence on their family or somewhere else. And there's one thing, they're all taking these medications.
Right.
So.
And so on the VA's page, they have, on the mental health, get help page, they have a link to a screening, which winds up being the PHQ-9, and it is a Pfizer product. And it's all, of course, copyrighted and all this other stuff. But the, you know, I just want to. I took the screening. It's 10 questions, right? You're whether or not you're depressed will be able to be determined in 10 questions. And so the first one was like, you know, and the options are always not at all, several days, more than half the days, or nearly every day. And so the first question is, you know, little interest or pleasure in doing things. The second, well, now it's all jamming on me, of course.
Well, they have, that's a standard form. I know that's a standard form that in many clinics and private practice, I think they collect that data. I think the federal government
They might. I'm actually afraid that they're on their way here. they say that this is anonymous. They say it's anonymous. But I went through two different times. And on the first time when I did it, my computer's jamming now. You know, are you sleeping? Are you eating? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? On the first time I did it, I did the most extreme, nearly every day I chose for things. And then when it got to the question of are you a danger to yourself or others, it went right to, you know, call 911 now. Oh, here we go.
Oh,
so feeling down or depressed. So if you choose nearly every day having little energy, you know, bad appetite or eating too much, feeling bad about yourself, not being able to concentrate, moving or speaking more slowly that other people have noticed, right? So if you choose nearly every day on all of those, and then you choose thoughts that you would be better off dead or hurting yourself in some way, if you choose nearly every day, it says, your screen results indicate that you may be at risk of harming yourself or someone else. Please call 911 or go immediately to the nearest hospital emergency room. You may also call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at the number. And so...
Well, Lauren, you may...
But if you also click not at all the way through, and then say that you have a thought that you'd be better off dead, they still immediately send you to the police first, a hospital second, or a... you know, a line that will ultimately call the police on you, third. And so there, people are not being given the opportunity on any level to truly have some kind of assessment before they wind up in there if they listen to this. You know, even somebody who answers not at all, you know, are you sleeping too much or too little? Not at all. Are you in a good mood all the time? You know, like, has nothing. If they say that they have the idea that they'd be better off dead, they are being instructed to go to call 911 and tell 911 that they may be a danger to themselves or somebody else. And it's a Pfizer product. And the screening test is a Pfizer product.
Oh, really?
Yes, it says it three different times with trademarks and copyrights.
It has copyrights on it?
On the test, on the government's website, that says that this is a PHQ-9 is a Pfizer product, Prime-MDR is a trademark of Pfizer, Inc., PHQ copyright 1999, Pfizer, Inc., all rights reserved, reproduced with permission.
Well, let me ask you this, Dr. Kitty. If you don't check, if you check, let's say, all those other things, if you had loss of appetite, can't sleep, but you don't check the things about that you feel like you're going to hurt yourself or whatever, what did they tell you to do then?
Oh, I checked that out, too. I checked that out, too. And in that case, it says... your screen results are consistent with many of the symptoms of depression. You are advised to see your physician or a qualified mental health professional immediately for a complete assessment. Although many veterans individuals cope well with symptoms like yours, effective treatment for depression are available to help you reduce your symptoms and improve your quality of life. A mental health professional or a physician can advise you about whether you can benefit from treatment and describe different treatment alternatives. The screen is not designed to provide a comprehensive assessment of diagnosis of depression. Only a qualified physician or mental health provider can provide a complete assessment and diagnosis of depression. Only a qualified physician or mental health professional can differentiate symptoms of depression from other medical conditions. Only a qualified physician or mental health provider can prescribe appropriate treatment for depression or other medical conditions. If you are concerned about any illness, regardless of what the screen shows, you should seek further evaluation from your physician. If you are concerned that you may have a medical emergency or having thoughts about harming yourself or someone else, call 911 or go immediately to the nearest hospital emergency room for an evaluation. You can print this page for your own records or give to your physician or a mental health care provider by pressing printing the paper.
Laura, and then what again, do you think happens when somebody has gone to VA with post-traumatic stress and it's been 2 or 3 months, or I understand some people have talked about 5, 6 months. So I think that we reasonably expect that after that length of time, some people might get frustrated and just say they're suicidal or will hurt themselves just so that they feel as though they can get some help from 911. But we know that's not the case, right?
No, it's not the case at all. And, you know, like we've been talking about and a conversation starting to happen on Facebook about it, and I think that's a really good thing, is that, you know, for somebody to be able to do a quote-unquote mental health evaluation, I mean, first, if you're from the public or if you're a veteran, do your own research on this, and then come back and let's talk if you don't know this information. But psychiatry is largely a fraud. If somebody with informed consent wants to take drugs, by all means, you know the risks and you know what the potential benefits are and any of the potential risks, and so do whatever drugs you want. But if you are not informed about the potential risks of taking these drugs, not only while you're on them, but also as you're coming off of them and for sometimes years afterwards of how it's been reported, the 2/3 of the people who take these drugs do not find benefit in them. And there's no biological proof of anything, any quote-unquote mental illness having any kind of biological or genetic evidence. It just does not exist. For centuries, they've been trying to make it exist, but it does not exist. And so the prescriptions themselves at front are altering your chemical makeup. And so informed consent is entirely important. But that's not what's happening. And people are not being given accurate facts, and they're giving massive drug cocktails, including the opiates. What makes it so much dangerous for so many of these veterans who are dying from these prescription drugs, more than twice the national average of people who are not veterans, they are dying death rates.
I'm not going to move a little bit. I want to say, I know this is, and you've probably done this, I want to say that, you know, Memorial Day is not Veterans Day. Memorial Day, right. We really are honoring the people who died.
Right.
And, you know, we got so many people that, they may not have died in action. They may have died years later after their service was over with, either from suicide or either from the complications of the medications. And, you know, just on a positive note, you know, maybe we can talk about some positive things that are available. I'm not in any way trying to say that this is a replacement for what the VA would do for somebody, but on this radio broadcast, people could be calling in from all over the United States, and there are, it may be helpful while they're waiting for their appointment to seek out support groups of other veterans, support groups of other, there are other people who have gone through trauma and what we call peer organizations that are around the country. If you might want to seek those organizations out maybe for some support. I know unlike the Vietnam era and the Iraq era veterans, when my dad came back from World War II, he came back from Korea, they all traveled back on a ship, and they had a long time together, and where they could talk about these things. Not saying that they did not have emotional stress, but now when you're in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever, in the space of two or three days, you can be back home. You may not be with the people that you fought with or that you served with. So you really don't have time to process together. So, and myself not being a service person, but having a father and a brother who's in service, it's something to be said for people who have the same types of experiences, being able to process those after they enter back into the country. You know, it's a totally different thing when one day you're being shot at and then the next day you're walking down the street and maybe a car backfires or something else. And people say, well, how could these things happen? But then you have to wait many months to try to get service. And I understand that some are veterans that might be on the line. They might want to seek out some support groups in addition to.
Absolutely. And if anybody wants to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167.
And that includes the family members, too, because, like I said, there's a lot of people mistake about Memorial Day. Memorial Day is about the people that died. And you have mothers, husbands, wives, sisters, and brothers.
Yeah.
That, you know, the loss of the young child, loss of a father, a loss of a mother. It does affect you, and so many people now, that's a shortcut also. There's a normal grieving process that people go through, and, you know, people are being prescribed medication when they really need other people to be around them. They need the support of their community. And our society has just gotten so feel happy that we're looking for instant solutions to a lot of things, and they're just not there.
I think you make really good points, and I think creating opportunities for people where they can just be listened to and not judged, and to understand that loss of camaraderie that is established while at war. And I think that the point that you made about the way people are coming home, not having all of that time to debrief and to be doing it very often on your own and just being dispersed back into the world with people who don't understand, you don't necessarily understand or can't hear what's really being said. And
there's a certain amount, even if you survive, there's a certain amount of grief. I mean, we have more, because medicine has gotten so much better. I mean, there are people now that come back that, 30 years ago, they wouldn't be alive. You know, they have people that you have triple amputees, quadruple amputees. You have people with awful scarring, that return, and we wouldn't have that, Vietnam, many of the people would not, if they had been in war in Vietnam, they would not be alive now. So
right.
You have people with brain injuries, you have people with extreme amounts of pain.
Right. Great. And I read that Shiznecki said that there was $7 billion being dispersed specifically for mental health services through the VA, $7 billion. And so what is $7 billion being spent on people who have fought for us? And how many, you know, I understand that I think part of the reason why I wanted to say Memorial Day in terms of focus on veterans, because I obviously, for all of those who have lost their lives in war, on battlefields, that is something that absolutely needs to be remembered. But there are thousands of people who are losing their life here because of the treatment that they're getting because of the experiences they had there. And as a way to caution and inform people who may be struggling with where they're at, that that there are alternatives, and that it's not necessary. And I think one of the thing that I was talking about before is the Welcome Johnny and Jane Home Project, and that can be found at listen2veterans.org, listen2veterans.org. And it's part of the outcome of the book by Paula Kaplan, When Johnny and Jane Come Marching Home, How All of Us Can Help Veterans. And I'd just like to read the passage that she has, you know, about the book, and for people to understand maybe where this is, you know, another perspective. So she writes, "Traumatized veterans returning from our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are often diagnosed as suffering from a psychological disorder and prescribed a regimen of psychotherapy and psychiatric drugs. But why, asks psychologist Paula J. Kaplan in this impassioned book, is it a mental illness to be devastated by war? What is mentally healthy response to death, destruction, and moral horror? In When Johnny and Jane Come Marching Home, Kaplan argues that the standard treatment of therapy and drugs is often actually harmful. It adds to veterans' burdens by making them believe wrongly that they should have gotten over it. It isolates them behind closed doors of the therapist's office, and it makes them rely on harmful drugs. The numbers of traumatized veterans from past and present wars who continue to suffer demonstrate the ineffectiveness of this approach. Sending anguished veterans off to talk to therapists, writes Kaplan, conveys the message that the rest of us don't want to listen or that we don't feel qualified to listen. As a result, the truth about war is kept under wraps. Most of us remain ignorant about what war is really like and continue to allow our governments to go to war without much protest. Kaplan proposes an alternative, that we welcome veterans back into our communities and listen to their stories one-on-one. She provides guidelines for conducting these conversations. This would begin a long overdue national discussion about the realities of war, and it would start the healing process for our veterans." And I think that the idea of communities reaching out to veterans and talking and listening is really important. And people can find information there at whenjohnnyandjanecomemarching.weebly.com.
That's really good, Lauren, because I'm quite sure that veterans would want to find that information and other people who know veterans. And they just, we just don't know about it, or because it's very important that we have this shared experience. I mean, it's not a shared experience. We haven't been to war, but I think that, you know, these wars are different than like World War II or something where the whole nation is involved. It's like, you know, like it's like you described in Kaplan's book. It's totally isolated. It's like, you know, you go to war, you come back, and we want to contain this, you know. And as you said, it's all in the doctor's office. We don't know what it's like. And why are we surprised that they have so many waiting lists? And,
right.
I mean, this is something that's gone.
That's a standard practice in mental health, right? I mean, that's the other thing. Is that this idea of multiple waiting lists for waiting lists, is standard in most state-operated mental health services.
But I know what surprised me was the months and months, because I know that, you know, it's often people say, well, you know, you'll get an appointment within, you'll have an appointment within 7 days of your discharge from the hospital. And I always caution people to say now, do they mean within 7 days they'll give you a date or within 7 days you'll see someone? And for someone that's really not in crisis, but they're sort of like in the breaking down stage, or they just come to the point where they want to get some help, even a week, but months, it's too long.
It's too long, because we don't have communities, because we don't have places where people gather any longer unless you have the ability to pay to get in. You know, there's no common spaces where people can just go to be amongst other people, and our lack of community supports adds to the problem, because what could be, you know, if you had one person to talk with. And so that's why I think what Paula J. Kaplan is doing is really important, trying to create opportunities for people to meet with each other and to not have to, you know, the fact that the government isn't holding up their end of the deal is horrifying. And, you know,
it's crossing all lines because really the VA has been cut over the last few years. We've had Congress has cut money to the VA, and I don't know if there's enough blame on all sides of the aisle. And I heard, I think, Blumenthal and some other senators and congressmen, you know, I guess sort of taking full responsibility on both sides of the aisle for this. But, you know, I want to see the people who got their bonuses, I want to see if they make them give them back or if they actually fire people.
I heard
now,
that
generally
the,
when you get a,
right, I heard that the woman had to pay back, and I'm blanking on her name right now, in Virginia, had to pay back, Arizona rather, had to pay back the bonus.
Some of them should go to jail because this is fraud. It's murder. I mean,
that's right.
You know, if you have people waiting for, and we're not, I mean, you're not talking about just mental health services. We're talking about
medical services.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. And I don't know how it is around the country. I know in our area that they really, public mental health, I don't know if there's something about how to get paid or whatever. If someone's enrolled in VA, I think that for some reason they can't bill Medicaid or other insurance or whatever. But I'm glad that they decided to let people get services elsewhere, because many times I've seen this in my community work, is that a person starts out with a physical problem, and because of the sheer frustration of trying to communicate to a healthcare provider or to get care for the physical problem, that from that frustration, then it appears to be that the person is having some emotional distress, and they find themselves getting mental health intervention when really it's frustration from not being able to get service for their physical needs. And I can, if this happens on the civilian side, I can see with the wait list that the waiting period they were talking about, at least as televised, if I had to wait 5 or 6 months, and in fact, if I was a family member and that my family member died, I mean, I would be extremely upset. The ripple effects, not just to that person being deceased, but to their entire family.
Absolutely, and I think that this is something that people need to become aware of and support, so that we don't have more people who were, you know, went and put their lines on the lives for us wind up dying here because we're killing them, because we're not giving them the medical services that we need, that they need. As a country, it's just horrifying that this is the way that we would wind up treating veterans coming back.
So how many, I don't know, minutes or seconds that some veteran is committing suicide, and they're not just talking about the current era veterans. They're talking about even World War II and Vietnam
right.
veterans are they're still having the effects. I mean, war is a horrible thing. It is not something that is natural, and it affects many people. And this is unusual in that many people are on their eighth or ninth deployment. So you can just think, and I know they stopped at one point, and I think they stopped about a few years ago. People had done their time and they wanted to get out of the military, and they would stop them from leaving. But
right.
I believe that.
Right, and I just want to give the number out again. It's area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. If you want to call in and talk about your perspectives about this, please do. And again, condolences to all whose family members perished fighting for us. The number that I saw most recently was 22 veterans a day. We're losing 22 veterans a day to suicide, and that more veterans have actually now completed suicide than have died at war. And so this is urgent that we look at these issues and look at how the psychiatric drugs are being used in combination with the opiates. And that vets who are the death rate for veterans from the combination, the cocktail of drugs with the opiates, is more than twice the national average. And so to really inform people that there are alternatives and there are supports that people can get, and that if you to just be able to listen is so crucially important, and over time people heal, but that we need to take this seriously because it's urgently important. There is another caller on the line. Your line is open if you would like to talk.
Hi, it's Amy Smith in Colorado.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Is that
good.
Yvonne there too?
Yes,
I'm here, Amy.
Hi, Yvonne. Well, I just wanted to say another couple things about Paula Kaplan, because I'm a real big Paula Kaplan fan, and I think she's kind of generally underappreciated. Her work is so vast, and even just in the work with veterans, there's all these other layers of work that she does that really speak to all these additional layers of just fraudulent, illegal, vicious behavior, and I'm thinking specifically of rape trauma in the military when women are raped, and then they, if they have got the courage to report it, are labeled as mentally ill and treated, you know, which is such
and,
oh,
it's my understanding
the
there are 1.6 million women who are veterans.
Yes. Somebody just came to my door, which hasn't happened for weeks, so can I call back in a little bit?
Yes, please do.
Okay, thanks, okay. Bye.
And sure. To follow on what she was saying about the rapes in the military, and now they're saying that there are more male on male rapes.
And that's an issue in every, in military or not, just a severely underreported issue.
Paula Kaplan, I know she's going to call back and say more. Paula Kaplan has done a lot of work, and if people are not familiar with her, they might want to Google. In fact, she's even a playwright. I don't know, Lauren, have you seen any of her plays?
I haven't seen, but I've followed, and I just think that her work is phenomenal. Of course, one of her earliest books that really affected me, I'm trying to grab it off of my bookshelf right now, is They Say You're Crazy, and that was published some years ago, and the subtitle is How the World's Most Powerful Psychiatrists Decide Who's Normal, and really goes into the underworld of how psychiatric diagnosis is made. And was published some time ago. I'm trying to find the copyright date here, 1995. And so I think that her work is really valuable, and other work that she's done, and I'm just trying to get to her website to give anybody who might be listening.
I'm going to try to look, too, for her on YouTube, because I saw a little play that she did on YouTube, and it's really, in a fun way, speaks of, you know, an exchange between a between the psychiatric profession.
Yeah, it's her website is paulajkaplan.net, and she has so many articles and books and work that she's done, and her work really is expansive and should have much more of an audience, and people can get a lot of valuable information from the work that she does.
And another person that has done work with veterans is Mary Ellen Copeland, the Wellness Recovery Action Plan. In fact, there is one of the little booklets that's for veterans that emphasizes trauma. And I just never wondered, why do they call post-traumatic stress disorder? Why don't they call it post-traumatic stress, post-traumatic injury?
Well, yeah, that's a good question, and I think, you know, even George W. Bush is pushing that we stop calling this a disorder, and that this is a natural response to an unnatural situation, and that that people can heal from this, and to not be psychiatrizing all of these a whole other group of people coming in that will, you know, be killed 25 to 30 years sooner because of the drug cocktails they're on, and you know, the life of poverty winding up living somebody, you know, who's been deemed gravely disabled.
Now, for those people that may not have the fantastic library that you have, they can Google Paula Kaplan, but also there are some YouTube presentations of hers, and that's spelled Paula Kaplan, C-A-P-L-A-N.
Yes, and her website that links to all of that is paulajkaplan.net, and yes, it's C-A-P-L-A-N, thanks. And Mary Ellen Copeland's website, where you can find the RAP and recovery books, is mentalhealthrecovery.com. And I'm just trying to look up the thing for veterans to see how I can get something more specific.
Because we want people to know that there is other things while they're waiting. Because I hope that this waiting period with the VA clears up. But I can see from your opening, going through their website, they rely heavily on medications.
Oh, it seems. I mean, they do specifically say that they offer talk therapies or cognitive behavioral kinds of stuff also, but it's not the first thing listed. And it's interesting because in their profile about their values and all of that kind of stuff, they list that services should be delivered, that it's, you know, pertinent that services are delivered in through the primary physician. But when you look at the treatment and services that they actually offer, primary physicians are primary care is 1, 2, 3 from the bottom. And so, you know, their first course of action seems to be short-term inpatient care, then outpatient. And I'm not sure if they did this by accident, but the list definitely isn't alphabetized, so it may just be random. But the common mental health treatments.
It's probably in priority. You know, this is the military now. It's ex-military people, VA, you know. But you can, as you said, that Mary Ellen Copeland, rapidrecoverybooks.com, and it's back on the first page as a link to veterans and people in the military. And she has a book and a film specifically for military. And there are other books on trauma, because I think that what I understand is most of this is related to trauma. If you've listened to the broadcast before, you know we've said that, you know, there is no blood test. There are no tests for mental illness, you know. And it's really a shame that we stigmatize our military by just trying to say this is a disorder when we know that this is something because of the environment of war.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just looking at the page on the RAP on mentalhealthrecovery.com /veterans, and they have sample RAP plans that were developed by 5 members of the Vermont Vet to Vet program, and other things like the DVD you were just talking about. And so I think that, you know, people should know that there are a lot of people out there who are struggling with this and who are surviving and who are even thriving. And that is.
And then there are webinars that are archived. If you go to the e-learning, there are webinars on trauma and RAP for veterans, the various ones that people can look at, and just like the resources on there. Could you give the Paula Kaplan's website again, please?
Yes, it's paulajkaplan.net, and paulajkaplan.net.
And there are other people that are doing stuff, too. I was hoping that Mo Armstrong would come on. I had told him about the broadcast that we're going to have. He is a Vietnam-era person who has developed some supports for veterans. But in the meantime,
I was just going to say, if people want to call, the number is area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. And so if you'd like to call in, if you have something you'd like to share, Mo, if you're out there listening, give a call. You know, when you look at how many people's lives are being affected, I've met several people who are veterans who have talked to me about the being put on a cocktail of drugs and within a month or 6 weeks gaining 7,500 pounds and developing diabetes from the drugs and are struggling with the withdrawal from the drugs, and drugs are not going to necessarily, drugs will suppress you, drugs will control you, drugs will knock you out, but the drugs will not fix the problems. And with $7 billion that the VA has for, you know, quote-unquote mental health services, it would be really interesting to find out exactly what the funding stream is going toward. And if people are being given supports in the community, or if it's all just, you know, fueling the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, especially since many of these drugs come with a little black box warning that it can cause suicidal or homicidal ideations.
Right.
Yeah, and. If people do decide to take medications, they should make sure that they get all the information about the particular medication that they're taking. I say that as a person with taking these medications before, that most people, if they got the manufacturer's insert and they read everything that was there, they would shy away. It's not saying that sometimes this can help people a little bit, but they never were. I don't believe they were never intended for people to be on these medications for 10, 15 years. Like,
they were tested for 6 weeks. They were tested by the FDA for 6 weeks, and you have people on them for decades. I think that the psychiatry likes to tell you that you're going to be on this for the rest of your life, right? That's the mantra. There's no cure. There's only control. But the drugs weren't tested for lifelong periods and would probably be seen unethical if you were to try to conduct a study like that. And
yeah, if you take chemo for cancer, what the standard treatment is with chemotherapy and radiation, no one suggests that people be on chemotherapy for 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years. What would happen if I was on chemotherapy for that length of time?
Yeah.
So all of the medications mostly have some side effects. Even aspirin, they have some side effect and over period. No one would suggest that you take. What would happen if I took an aspirin? If I took aspirin in high doses, not the small doses that people take so that they can thin their blood. But you know, many people who get these medications, when they stop doing what they think they do, they are revved up to a higher dose and a higher dose. What would happen if I was taking 5 aspirins every day?
Right. And then to understand that it's dangerous. It's as dangerous as any other substance of an immediate withdrawal in coming off. It causes all kinds of major conflicts in the body to withdraw from these drugs. And so the way people titrate down and slowly come off, because when people just go off, it causes all kinds of emotional crises and withdrawal.
We should talk about this a little bit more, because sometimes I know that I have been phasing down on these medications, and my doctor has worked with me. In fact, some things like discovering I had sleep apnea really, you know, helped to get my sleep under control. But, you know, when people are on these medications and they find out about it, it's unfortunate. The worst thing you could do is to go off of them cold turkey.
Yeah.
Because it's just like if someone has a street drug and they're taking it and they all of a sudden come off, they're going to have withdrawal. So,
I think that's just such an important point. I want to echo that. People think that because these are prescribed that they're safe and that they're not like street drugs, but they're chemicals just like street drugs. Just who's making the profit off of them switches.
And you can't have withdrawal. And, you know, as a lot of people would say, I know we still are in the shadows and of the incident in California, and other incidents that happen around the country, and they will continue to happen because I don't know any instance where the person was not in treatment, where the person was not getting chemicals. So even to the fact that someone would say that we've got to, if these people would just take these medications, then this or that wouldn't have happened.
Right.
There's no guarantee of that. There's no way to predict.
It's not true. And there were plenty of, with the Elliot Rodger, where the most news stations that I'm listening to aren't even mentioning his name anymore, and that's been a trend. To try to not give glorified status to people who wind up committing heinous murders. But it may also be because he's one of theirs. The son of a Hollywood producer, and so my condolences to all of the families, including Elliot's family and all of the people who have lost somebody or who are in the hospitals or recovering from this. Obviously, in no way am I justifying what he's done, but I've now finished reading his 130-some-odd page writings that he left behind. And what a failure. If this doesn't show to people the idea that psychiatry does not have the answers for this, that psychiatry does not know what it's doing. There were so many places where the mental health professionals could have interjected. They could have listened to him. They could have talked to him. They could have seen. This didn't come over over a week or a 2 week period. This built up by his writings somewhere between 10 and 16 years that it took for him to get to the point of where he was, where all of the adults around him did not respond to what it was that he was needing. And so I just think it's important to understand that the majority of people who we're talking about with laws that will put you under an involuntary outpatient commitment, and this is happening to people who are veterans. Veterans are getting put on involuntary outpatient commitment laws. And they, in New York, they are having their guns taken away from them under the New York SAFE Act. This is not Elliot. The massacre in California is not who we're talking about. That is, and he did everything legally. He owned the guns legally. He purchased them legally. These laws are not going to stop these things from happening.
I remember seeing one veteran on, going back to 60 Minutes, who was saying in his community that you know, people were afraid of him because he has military training, and people will, this is why this Murphy bill could be dangerous to everyone, because anybody could be picked up and forced to take these very strong chemicals just because of their experience, because they are reacting to terrific memories that they have from war.
Right.
And at the same time, they're not able to get the kind of help they need because there's been a cover-up in the Veterans Administration.
Right.
So that's why I think it's important that we just tell people about the resources that we know and that other people come online and do that as well, because you don't have to be isolated.
And the number, if you'd like to call in, is area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. Paula J. Kaplan .net is also a one of the references we were talking about when Johnny and Jane Come Marching Home, How All of Us Can Help Veterans project, and the RAP and recovery books can be found at mentalhealthrecovery.com/veterans.
And Laura, can you tell people how, if they want to hear past broadcasts, how long are they archived?
I believe that they're permanently archived. And if you go to blogtalkradio.com/talkwithtenny, that will pick up my page and it will show you the current show, if we're on air, upcoming shows, and all of the archived shows. And you know, it's over 1,000 downloads so far, and this has been going on for like a week. So people are listening.
Cool.
Yeah, so people are listening, and I appreciate that very much. And, you know, as Yvonne and I have been talking about and was talked about the other night, sometimes it's hard for people to call in right away, and maybe you want to listen for a while and then call in at some point. So when you're comfortable, please do call in at 267-521-0167, and we will talk.
Also, you can people may want further discussion after or during that. Lauren has a Twitter page, and I know that all during the even if you call in another time and you haven't gotten these locations of these websites down, I know that Lauren will repeat them again. But what's your Twitter page?
Oh, my Twitter is Lauren10E, so like the number 10 and the letter E, 10E, Lauren10E. So that's my Twitter. What's your Twitter?
My Twitter is YZ Smith. Yes, Zebra, S-M-I-T-H.
Thank you. And I think if
people are on social media, that could help also let Lauren know about what kinds of subjects you'd like to talk about, or even send links about hot topics. You know, at some point you're probably going to have a something about how this affects the African American community, because in the mental health system, just as in the prisons. In the public mental health system, this is the overabundance of people of color.
Yeah.
And also these drugs are being used against seniors now. I said there's a war on people with emotional distress. The pharmaceutical companies have never seen a customer that they couldn't sell several products to. And I think the
plan if they can't, there's a court there ready to force you.
And that is from cradle to grave, you know. I think if they found some way to sell you some of these drugs while you're in the casket, I'm waiting. I just saw something this past week about how they have pills now that can track you. That it was in Sunday's Washington Post.
Right, the FDA just approved that the pill with the tracking device in it to be able to monitor your levels of certain drugs that you're on. And
you can put it on your iPad or whatever. So, you know, when someone says, well, I've got a chip in me, you say, oh, they may really have one in them, because they have that technology that's available. To put those in pills, and I don't know if I want to be that closely monitored.
What you know versus what you don't know, and because of historical ethical breaches and just moral depravity over the years, and things like the Tuskegee, now formerly known as the public health syphilis study. And the testing of dirty radiation on people on the Upper West Side at Columbia during the MRI trials or something about 3 or 4 years ago, where they're still targeting.
Lauren, really, you were saying, I was listening to you a few minutes ago.
I'm sorry?
If these medications weren't meant to be taken for more than 7 weeks, just like I said, no one takes chemo or radiation for years. No one takes penicillin for years. In fact, they warn against taking antibiotics to that level. So everybody who's taking these chemicals, they're in some kind of long-term experiment.
And quite frankly, the FDA continues, we're all in post-market research, right? So anything for, I think it's 5 or 6 years after a drug actually gets approved to go onto the market, It's in a post-market research phase where any side effects have to be reported and so on and so forth before, you know, where the drug is continued monitored. So we're all research subjects to that degree, and if there are enough deaths or some side effect, then perhaps a warning will be put on the label that a court doesn't have to pay attention to. I don't understand why courts don't have to pay attention to the warning labels on the drugs, and I don't understand why that doesn't get carried into the decision-making process of forcibly making people take these drugs. And again, with all of the veterans who have lost their life to these cocktails of psychiatric drugs, or like Jerome Rideau, who is 56 years old, former Marine, winds up in Rikers, and is the headline says, you know, quote unquote, baked to death, left in a cell at 101 degrees. There are so many different places where this is occurring.
Yeah.
We have a couple of more callers that just came on the line. So area code 304, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. And
hey.
Is that...
Hey, Lauren, how are you doing there?
Good. Who is this?
Oh, I'm the pest from West Virginia. Last from the pest.
Larry Filcher.
I just
thought I'd say hello, wake you up a little bit from your regular, from me, because with me, I'm an individual who likes to make myself known in my opinions, but I just wanted to tell you, you're doing a great job getting the words out, what's going on with people, and we just need thousands more that'll do the same thing. Step up to the plate. Not enough people that's got your, I won't say the words, but yeah, you're a courageous, brave person, let me tell you.
Well, thanks for calling in.
I can tell you anything you want. I mean, as far as individual problems, you know, that people have to suffer with, because I live it every day, and I know what people do, and as far as on my end, I mean, I know people are suffering different ways, and I'm still going back to my same old thing, that just need people a little more understanding, more love in their heart, instead of talking about stuff, just to do something. And it's just everybody just talks about it and doesn't do a damn thing, excuse my language. Not enough. I get aggravated after a while. I mean, really burns me up, but anyway, I'm happy to see that you're doing your thing and helping folks. That's what's important, and people are talking.
Thanks. I think people talking is really important. And so would you share, because one of the things we're trying to make sure people know is that there are ways out of this whole mess and that there are alternatives and that there are supports available. Do you have any suggestions of places where people can reach out to or things that, you know, you might find beneficial?
As far as in what particular need, and what do people that have been talking about, what kind of problems have they had that they need support
to
with?
To the traditional psychiatry.
A what?
Complement or alternative to traditional psychiatry. We're talking about today about our veterans and about the gaps in the VA system, and if you didn't hear before, we had suggested people go to community groups, and Lauren had mentioned Paula Kaplan's Johnny Comes Marching Home. I had suggested Mary Ellen Copeland's work with veterans, and that, you know, people get in touch with support groups in their areas.
So you're not getting support?
Well, we're just looking at what's going on with the Veterans Administration and medical care, where they have all of these fraudulent waiting lists and the way they're just letting veterans.
Just like everything else with the federal government, a bunch of red tape, and people that really need help don't get the help, and people that actually get in the cracks that don't even need the help get the help. It's ridiculous. It really is. I mean, I mean, there's so much red tape to go when you work with the government. They do have some good programs. There's no question about it. But to get to really get to use them, and for people with needs, you know, and they actually need it, that's a different story. You have to go through hell and high water to get any help when you really need it. It's screwed up. I mean, if you need help, you almost have to be dying on the corner, and then people might just kick you in the curb and just go and run over you.
Well, that's what we're saying.
As bad as it is. I mean, people got to see the truth. They got to see how ugly it is before things are changed. And it's not ugly enough, I guess. There's just not enough people dying, I guess. Not enough abuse. Not enough people needing help, I guess. And where people can really see it. They need to see this thing face to face. They need a face to it. They need a look. They need to see pictures. They need to see film. They need to see people's pain. They need to see how people live every day, the suffering. My God,
yeah.
I think America is more apt to help people in other countries than they are to help their own self. I mean, I'm the first one to go help on hurricanes and everything. I think go for it. Help democracy, but my God, where does this democracy start here? Where does people help here? Don't you think that America should help its own people first and then go on to help others too? I mean, they can live, but my God, we should be, there shouldn't be a community in our country that would people that don't have proper education, place to live, and proper hair and health care and support all the way around. That should be number one, and it's not. I mean, it just faces, it's not there. We're not there. All these great programs and people falling, they're just not getting the help. I mean, it's terrible. I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, but I mean, I know I get on here and I vent because I just enjoy talking to people. At least will listen and understand. The problem that we have, that people that are doing good are working, they're more like robots. They just go. They go to work. They take care of the families, and they have closed ears and closed minds unless a problem hits home. I'm telling you. I mean, 30 years ago, it was different when I was growing up because I'm 63. The doors were open. Now you can't even, I talked to my wife, said everybody's afraid. If you're afraid of human beings, I mean, if it's a stranger and you're afraid of most people because you don't know them, I mean, you know, because they look different or whatever, how in the hell can you help people no matter what the problem is? You can't do that. You can't just, you can't judge people because, just like Doug kind of judge a book by its cover. You can't do that. It's not right. I mean, human beings should be treated equal no matter what they look like, where they come from, what problems they have, and treated equally. And it's just not fair.
Yvonne?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I wanted to say that we have 970. Are you there?
Yes, yes. This is the Colorado Amy again.
Hi, Colorado Amy. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Hi, Larry.
Larry, you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Lawson.
I think he's there. Okay.
I'm here.
You're here. Okay,
okay,
good. I want to say that I think that you're saying things that need to be heard. And Amy, do you have any kind of, you were in the middle of talking before, and then, so we're just talking about how the government isn't necessarily responding, and when it does, it's impossible to get in to anything, and ways that veterans who are coming home can reach out for support and find some alternatives to what they're going to be getting offered if they take that depression screening on the VA website, which I think is a real big problem, the Pfizer product, quote unquote. So I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. What you want, Amy, what you were talking about before about Paula J. Kaplan.
I think that what makes, well, I was talking about the rape trauma of women better. I mean, just the outrage of, you know, experiencing a cultural situation where you're a victim and you can't report, because if you do, you are labeled as mentally ill and treated, and it's just, and she's done a lot of work around that, and it's just like multiple layers of problems. But I think really when you're talking about solutions, and it's so complicated and overwhelming, but it was something that you said the other day, Lauren, that really hit me, is that this is an environmental problem. What we need are healthy communities, and what we need are people to support each other, just like what Larry's talking about, that you cannot be unkind to people because they look different. You can't.
Not that.
You think
right.
that somebody looks different than you and be afraid. And listen, I'm from Colorado. There is no state that is more frightened than Colorado and more reactionary. And, you know, we're following in the footsteps of New York State without a peer community. New York State has got a strong, powerful peer community that balances some of the legislation and policies that have developed there. But, boy, we don't have that here, so it's going to be an interesting social experiment. But, you know,
you might want to explain to people what's going on, because the we have potential of having callers from all the 48 states. So,
well, you know, in Colorado, yeah, we've had so many mass shootings here that our governor instituted a mental health reform, or behavioral health, because a big part of it is the integration of substance use and mental health. And for the past year and a half, we've been battling multiple civil commitment expansion threats, and this year, at the 11th hour, Aubrey Shomo came to Colorado and really did some really significant work with the
Phenomenal.
Legislators and policymakers, and really derailed the last couple of attempts. They were trying to take away our right to a jury trial. They tried to streamline the substance use and mental health commitment criteria so that instead of a 72-hour hold, it would be 5 days. And I said, can't you make it 4 days and 23 hours, you know, because if it's 5 days, that spans 2 weekends, that's 9 days, you know, so fortunately
they
didn't
do that.
And then
they tried to remove, the word imminent from imminent danger as the standard,
yes.
right?
Yes, because they claim that that would just, and, you know, all along, and something that you said just a minute ago, everybody is saying, Larry, that people that want treatment can't get it. They are clamoring at the doors. And so why are we doing, why is every state expanding civil commitment law? Why is that?
And people also need to realize that all of these mass murders or individual murders that keep on getting popped up as evidence for why things like the Murphy Bill, H.R. 3717, need to be passed, is all of them either were seeking treatment and refused, or on one of these psychiatric drugs that has a side effect of homicide or suicide. And
yes.
nobody is paying attention to this in the mainstream media, and it's infuriating that, to borrow a quote from Yvonne, that they're asking the wrong questions. Nobody is telling them what questions that they should be asking about
right.
looking
that
at
is,
this.
Well,
and
Lauren,
I just wanna,
they know. There's
right,
a lot of noise going on.
Of course they
know. They're masquerading assisted outpatient treatment as a service. There is no such sort of service
right.
as that. And only thing that you'll be doing is pushing people, giving judges who don't have mental health training, you're going to give them the power to be very specific to what medication you take, to where you go get your treatment. People don't understand that. They think, well, this will help so-and-so who doesn't want to get treatment. It's like Lauren said, there are so many people who want treatment that can't get it, and they don't have the capacity. I wish that they would spend as much money as they would want to give to the Justice Department, to the sheriffs, that they would give money for the alternatives that we know that do work. That
because
are not,
it's all a fraud. Because it's all a fraud. The whole idea of psychiatric drugs, making any kind of money, is a fraud. And,
right.
And I just want to add in for people, especially people who are veterans, the things like the New York SAFE Act, which has eliminated the Second Amendment rights for people. I personally know vets who have had their guns threatened to be taken away from them, but who are being forcibly drugged. And that this idea that you can go and fight war, and when you come back that you're relegated to less than a person as a mental patient that now needs to be drugged and controlled, these messages need to stop being put in. I want to just say that we have another caller on the line. Are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Michael Corbin. I run a suicide awareness campaign, an online suicide awareness campaign, everyminute.org.
Great.
And
I just, go ahead.
What would you like to talk about?
I just tuned in while I was tuning in and heard the sham argument. I mean, believe me, I'm not a fan of medications, but I do believe there is a certain place for medications in the psychiatric arena. I mean, I do believe they're way overused, way overutilized, and mismarketed, to say the least. But I personally do feel that there is a place for them. It's just being way over attributed to a cure or even a how do I want to say even a
it's a first line of defense. That's what
yeah.
Well, can I ask you a question?
Thank you.
Go ahead, Amy.
This is Amy in Colorado, Michael. I'm looking at your website here, and it seems to be oriented a lot towards research. And so I'm wondering how much energy are you guys putting towards
well, it's just me.
Like outcomes? Oh, thank God. outcomes in other countries that are really excellent, like, for example, the Open Dialogue project
yes.
in Western Finland and things like that. That
Soteria.
Have been up and running, Soteria houses, and have been up and running for decades and have got fantastic outcomes, are not medical. I'm very concerned about the direction that research is taking. I've been really following the NIM research, and of course that's being funded, you know, nationally through Obamacare or through the Obama's gun safety initiative.
Yeah.
But it is completely and totally dedicated towards finding a biological cause of so-called mental illness.
Waste of money.
Well, I'm not opposed to finding a quote-unquote biological cause myself either. Or at least focusing funding towards that, because, I mean, I do believe there's got to be some kind of genetic issue.
They've been looking
involved.
For this for years. I mean, this is where the fraud
yeah,
gets
but,
perpetrated, because people
you know,
want
you know
there
what?
To be a
well,
biological cause. But there
well,
there is none. They've been looking for it for centuries. They've never been able to come up with it. This is a environmental, social, cultural, economic issue, and you know, you don't see many people who are you know, wealthy being put on involuntary outpatient commitment laws. It's this is targeted toward people of color and people who are poor. And
yeah, and why look for a biological cause when there are other modalities operating that are socially based, that are not medical, that have got fantastic outcomes and that are cheap to operate? And the reason is because this is not a health issue. This is social control.
Right. And I'd like to just make sure, because if you weren't on the show earlier, I definitely always mention, I'm for informed choice and consent.
Yes, me too.
Full informed choice and consent. And I think that people should be able to do whatever drugs they want to do, and that should not be. But when it gets to issues of coercion or not being informed or being outright forced through injectables or having a medication prompter come and show up at your house and make sure that you're taking it at threat of institutionalization, these are where the issues are. But I think that the longer we even play with the idea of a biological route to this, the longer abuse and trauma is going to allow to be occurred. When you look at the numbers, 98% of people who have psychiatric histories in state-operated facilities have childhood histories of physical or sexual abuse or emotional abuse or neglect. These are where the problems are coming from.
I believe there's a biological component to it that actually there's a huge – I believe the major components to it are environmental. But I think that there's a biological component to it that brings up your susceptibility to
specific. I remember this because I came from where Michael is coming from, and many people have. A lot of people think that when people say that there is no biological, chemical imbalance or whatever, and we're saying that people aren't truly suffering.
I'm never saying that.
I know, but sometimes when people hear that...
Hey guys, can I say something?
Yes, sir.
I don't want to interrupt you guys, but I agree to, as far as, you know, I mean, everybody's talking, you know, you go into detail about the drugs and all that, and everybody knows that, I think that once you had some type of mental health issues and you've been around this type of environment, I mean, how the treatments are and how everybody gets treated. You're almost like sheep. You get in there and they want to treat you just like you have a broken arm, and you say, here, go ahead, take a pill and you're fixed. Go to psychiatrists. They just want to give you a prescription and you got your prescription, all right? Oh, that's fine. You're fine. Well, there's a lot more to, you cannot deal with the mind and just take a pill. You can't do it, folks. It's a different ball game when you're dealing with your body, with your mind. You can't deal with it the same way as you would a broken bone, stuff like that. You have to have a complete evaluation of an individual's problem, background, to see what's going on that could have, what is the cause. You can't just put a Band-Aid on it. So we're not there yet to find with the right programs, the right treatment, and everybody knows it. We're all saying the same thing, kind of. We're upset about the way things are going. We don't like our treatment, and things aren't right. People are suffering right now, and I'm suffering myself. Probably you guys are suffering. We need to have the support. Instead of going through the front door with this and trying to get the answers, which would be a long time coming, go to the back door and find easier solutions. And that's what I'm for. And that is, awareness, educational awareness of what the need is, what's going on. Have more of that first. You got to be able to let the word out, get people together to understand that people that are something have to know that there is support, there is people, and who to call, and then get information. Because like
the ladies are having.
Yeah, problems. That's what we're talking about. It's all of a sudden. But anyway, the local support. Need like local support where people can have group talks, and that's been there, that have kind of success either in a holistic recovery type thing. I used to be a member of the organization called it was Depression Bipolar Support Alliance, and I used to have support groups and all that. And the problem was that it was great, and different people would come all the time. But we didn't have what to help people. We didn't we weren't working together, something of interest to keep people to be on an active, do something to change their lifestyle, to be able to help them realize that in order for them to go on a recovery, a lot of stuff has to do with themselves in a healthy change. It could be diet, it could be exercise,
very much so.
It could be meditation. And I really believe that a mixture, and this is where I'm, and I'll let you guys, because I've got, I think medication with holistic type healthy lifestyle treatments is the way to go, and people need to be educated on that, and there should be educated awareness in all communities on mental and physical wellness.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Michael, did you get a chance?
Yeah, I'm not even in agreement that medications are a lifelong necessity.
It's just
I'm
a
saying that
it's
there
just
are a place.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely a place. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. If
but
you
their place
somebody,
is never forced. If somebody voluntarily, with informed consent, wants to take a drug, take a drug. But if that drug is being coerced or forced or somebody is being misinformed that there is some actual benefit that they're going to get from that, and that there's an actual biological... Because once you've introduced a drug, you've now changed the biology. So where there may not have been biological issues going on before, now there's a drug that is definitely introduced a biological issue.
I'm in complete agreement.
I think that we're on the same page. It's just that some people have had some benefit from it, just like you had said earlier, Lauren. And we agree... These were not meant for people to take for the rest of their life. And things that were meant to be taken, just like antibiotics or like chemotherapy, people have taken them for many years, and that's where they're having
advantage. With the exception of the fact that with antibiotics and sometimes with chemotherapy, they can show, sometimes even with antibiotics, they can show some kind of actual physiological evidence. There's some kind of test. There's a test for cancer.
They're getting the technology now to actually be able to show that with
I think that, well, they've been saying that for two centuries, Michael. Since the establishment of this, they've been saying that, and I think it's dangerous. To be, and what the pharmaceutical industry does and what the psychiatric industry does in promoting this is if they have fact or that someday they will find the fact, so it's okay to do these things, is what is killing us 25 to 30 years.
I am not in agreement with the way the psychiatric community, the pharmaceutical community, has promoted the drugs and what they have promoted the drugs and being capable of doing. Believe me, I am not. I abhor the way they have gone about doing that. And I don't think that they're a lifelong necessity like they have, you know.
Well, let me ask
claimed to be. And I also don't think that they're being prescribed appropriately. Specifically
or
for
withdrawn
you know,
appropriately
or,
either.
Well, I think there needs to be better protocols
let me ask you this
put
question.
In place for withdrawal.
They're going to have because if you say if people are saying that they're looking for a cure or a cause, is it that it is some virus? Is it going to be in the blood? What does it look like from what you've been seeing? What does it look like it's going to be? Is it something that's transmitted across species or?
No, the way.
Focal infection.
See, when I say research,
let's be respectful.
I see myself. See, I've kind of been out of the game for quite some time. I had issues where I was working out at Gaylord, the Opryland, when Opryland flooded, and I got a really bad cut and ended up with fibromyalgia after getting MRSA, C. diff, lots of different issues. So I've been out for quite a while, and I'm just now starting to get back. I've even been dealing with trigeminal neuralgia. So
yeah, I just wanted that. The reason why I'm asking that question, because earlier was saying the same thing about some depressed not asking the right questions, and sometimes to be able to have us to think respectfully. What I was asking is that just from what you're seeing, okay, and I respect everybody's point of view. I think we all agree here that there's overuse. But as far as the argument of whether there is, what do you think from what you've seen in the research, and I know you've been out of it, what does it look like? Are they looking toward this being something that's a virus, a gene thing?
There are genetic components, and they're finding out, especially
no, there are
that,
not genetic components. That is not true. They would like to find genetic components, but they have not found any genetic components.
Give me a chance here.
Okay,
well, we need to be very careful about the way we say it, because if I can't elaborate, then I can't fully formulate a
complete concept. All right. So, give me a break here.
Be respectful.
I'm trying here. But there are genetic components. I mean, even through different stages of life, genetics have shown to have different, DNA has actually mutated in different specific situations, even just something as far as even.
But
even
our environments are what spark those. Our environments are what spark any kind of changes. But again, the National Institute of Mental Health.
There's a genetic component to that.
How your body reacts to that environmental. When you read any of
action.
These sites, they always say, maybe in the future, or we think this may have something to do with, or a very small number of things have been seen to maybe have something to do with maybe something someday. It is all science fiction.
Yes.
Well, they've got to be very
it's
careful
the language.
In what they report as well.
And so do I. And what we need to report is the truth, not propaganda, that this is so when it's not. And this is what's damaging, the environment, trauma, experiences of war, experiences of abuse, poverty, discrimination. These are the things, economics, that are at the root of what is going on. And there is no biological or genetic evidence. And the reason that the National Institute of Mental Health puts it out that way is because that is what the truth is.
Well,
and
we know that we know definitely that there is a biological issue going on, because
if that was the case, instead of going to a psychiatrist and spending 2 or 3 hours doing a diagnostic, they wouldn't waste time with that. They would just go and take some blood or some skin, and they would look at your genes. They wouldn't have to. Someone that was for disability for Social Security, they wouldn't. They would first establish that you have a disease, because that's what we're saying here. And this is why I have to be patient with people, because I was one of those people that believed that mess too. Because you wouldn't go through all that.
When you're looking at the demographics of when breaks usually happen, and it normally happens during a vast majority. Of the breaks happen within specific demographic time periods of your life, and they also correlate.
But look at the cultural social clock for those time periods. These are the same time periods that people are first getting exposed to total freedom as an adult, and also at the same time having to face every responsibility that an adult has.
And
so
there are also
economic,
the times
social,
when your brain
cultural,
is actually. There are also
and,
the times
so
when your brain is actually trimming.
Let him speak.
there are also times when your brain is actually trimming connections on a very mass scale to develop and redevelop.
We are constantly developing and redeveloping.
Let me ask you this question.
We are constantly in those development modes. But these are specific time periods in your life when they are at the highest levels.
Let me ask you this question: how often do you get brain scans yourself personally?
Not very.
Have you ever had one?
Me?
Yes. Have you ever had a brain scan?
Yes, I actually have.
How long ago?
That would have been, within the range of 5 or 6 years.
Okay. Now,
I just had an MRI for my neck and back.
If I accept that as a premise, it would seem that just like a person who had diabetes, and I don't want to compare it to that, it seems like you would be getting brain scans quite frequently. And just hold that thought. If that was the case, I had an instance where I went to a secret conference that they have here. They have about 500 people here every year. They have this conference with the judges and people.
It's quite expensive technology.
And I think I told you about it before. And they brought those brain scans out. And I got up and I asked some questions about it. And finally, each one of them said, the people that come before you in court, are they going to have these brain scans? And the guy who was a trauma person who worked on one of these TV programs with CSI, he was one of the technical supports, he said, please, to the people, do not bring these brain scans into court. So the brain scan, it's colorful. No one is using it to diagnose. No one is using it to treat or even to decide what treatments they're having.
And the National
and
Institute of Mental Health.
This is why I asked the question.
Mm-hmm. The National Institute of Mental Health specifically says there are no blood tests, brain scans, or genetic testing. That none of this is true. And even the place that was doing the genetic testing wound up shutting down. And if you look at their website, you'll see that.
The thing about it is we have to help educate people because sometimes we have to use common sense. If that was the case, every so often, just like I go and get an OBGYN checkup or get a mammogram, if that was the case, we'd all be getting brain scans. We'd all be having that. I mean, even if they just wanted to do that, but we're not. And
well, right now, the brain scan that they have to utilize actually has to utilize radiation. It's for something to be used on a regular basis, it actually can be quite detrimental to your health, and it's quite cost intensive. So, I mean, something that can be used for preventive treatment.
Just because it's cost prohibitive doesn't mean that we'll doesn't really show evidence, doesn't mean that we'll say it does and drug people with these drugs that are killing people. It's fraudulent. And so we need to interject there. Amy, you've been hanging on for a while. You have anything you'd like to – we have about 7 minutes left. Wondering if you'd like to jump in here at all.
I didn't mean to come in and jump.
No. It's been really interesting listening to you. I wanted to mention that a couple of years ago I went to the International Congress on Schizophrenia Research, had a one-day free event for the community. And it was one of the most revealing. They picked about 10 presenters and had them do some quick little presentations and then did Q&A for the rest of the day. And it was organized by NAMI Colorado, and so it was primarily family members who were interested to know what was on the horizon for schizophrenia research. And told them was that the focus of research at that time was compliance, and you were talking earlier about the smart pills,
the tracking, right,
with a GPS, and so that the pills have a little piece of metal embedded in them, and so when you can't cheek it, you can't spit it out, you can't throw it up. It has to dissolve inside you, and the metal makes a current on the patch and notifies whoever is to be notified whether or not you took your medication. And I just, you know, that was 3 years ago, and ever since then, my senses have been on high alert, and, you know, I have overarching questions about where we're headed. You know, why are we expanding civil commitment laws when we can't provide services for people that want them? Why are research protocols heading, you know, barreling strictly down this one road of biological only and not looking at anything else? That when I went to South Africa last year for the World Network meeting, there's all kinds of interesting stuff going down on in South America. I was thinking that it's all, you know, the Scandinavian countries are where it's at, but there's one thing with a huge tax base. There's something else, again, with no money at all and no oversight and no infrastructure, which we do have in some parts of the United States, you know. So I do think that there's some hope, but, man, I just – More and more, it's an environmental lens. We have got to start to learn how to treat each other right.
Yes.
That's what is going to, if we could manage a way, if suddenly tomorrow we only had healthy families in this country, psychiatry would disappear.
Yep.
Disappear.
Yep, I want to say that the live show will end in a few minutes, but we can keep on talking if anybody would like to do that. And I really appreciate the honesty of the conversation and the respectfulness that's happening in the interchange. And I think that that's really good, and shows that people with differing opinions can have a conversation about something and maybe come up with some solutions. There is another caller on the line who's indicating to me that they want to talk. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
646?
Lauren?
Yes.
Lauren, it's Rita DiCarlo.
Hi, Rita. How are you?
Well, I'm excited about talking to you. I didn't know whether you were on the West Coast and your time is later. I can't remember where you are.
Oh, I'm in New York, so it's 9 Eastern that we start.
Same. Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
July. Yeah, I just want to say, for anybody who may be out there, if you have a news tip or have an idea for a show or would like to anonymously report something, the Talk with Tenny tip line is area code 718-273-8708, and that's 24 hours a day. You can call and leave a tip on that line. Websites that we've been talking tonight include PaulaJKaplan.net and mentalhealthrecovery.com/veterans for anybody who's lost a soldier at war or somebody in the military who's lost their lives, in remembrance of their service and what it is they did for this country. We're very appreciative. And for any vets who may be struggling, know that there are supports and there are alternatives and there are ways that you can get in touch with people and heal from what it is you've been through. And if you are subject to involuntary outpatient commitment or things like having your guns taken away or anything like that, please call the Talk with Tenny tip line at 718-273-8708 if you'd like to have those kinds of issues aired. And so I just getting back to the conversation now, I think that it's really important that we really continue to address these issues and get the truth out there. Rita, is there something you'd like to talk about specifically, or
Well, actually, there was. I'm a Vietnam era disabled veteran, PTSD, service connected, and misdiagnosed.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Just wanted to let people know that you may just well be having a spiritual experience that's being diagnosed as schizophrenia. And that's really what I was. That's the topic I would be talking about when I come back, because that's what's happened to me.
I think that's really important. Would you just in a couple of sentences or just a brief? Would you just give an overview of for somebody who might not understand? I appreciate what you're saying, but for listeners in the audience who might not understand what you're referring to.
There are people who are prophetic who receive revelation, and you may not even have any idea that it's you that's having it. Those kinds of experiences. And as it turns out, now the church has confirmed that I am indeed a prophet who has a revelation. And they're reviewing my revelations now. I've had two priests look at it already, and a third's looking at it in the next 2 weeks. And they've both affirmed they're amazed by it. And, yes, it's definitely a revelation. And they're becoming my mentors and guides through the spiritual process that takes place for a person in the church who experiences that, who's been diagnosed as mentally ill.
That's quite amazing.
Thank you for sharing.
It's an amazing experience. It's taken 36 years for it to reveal itself, and finally for me to realize that's what's happening, and for other people to be able to see it and recognize it as such, because I've finally written a book about it, which is on my Yahoo group. I have 28 people who read the chapters as I write them.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful.
That's it.
Would you like to, is it open to the public? Would you like to give out information about how people can contact you? Or
it is. It's a Yahoo group. If you go to the Yahoo group and at the end you put the / Grail Vision Code Maps, it'll get you to my main page.
Thanks.
The group is called
Grail
Vision Code Maps, GRAILVISIONCODEMATS.
Great. Thank you. And we'll try to get a link up there on the page also so that people who may be listening can get to it easily. And I'd
Great.
Love to do a show just, on this. And, in the last few nights, people who may not have known others who have called in talking about spirituality, talking about unified field theory, talking about having to deal with these larger issues of spirituality, and I think it would be a great and important thing. And people should be aware that people having a spiritual experience is diagnostic criteria for schizophrenia. And another clear violation of how, with no medical test, with no evidence of anything, people are just being locked up and drugged and dehumanized and having their human rights and civil and constitutional rights violated.
The opening of the third eye is manifests in a person as a schizophrenic experience if people don't know what the third eye is. You have to know these things and understand them, or else you can't know what's happening to you. You think you're going crazy when it happens. So this is something that needs some attention. I really recommend Seth Farber's book, Spiritual Gift of Madness. I think that's a good read for everyone.
Oh, yes, and Seth Farber and I actually will be at Left Forum with a couple other people on Saturday, May 31st.
I know. I'm sorry. I can't come. I'm in Florida.
I'm very, very excited about that, and I'm hoping that maybe we'll be able to do some kind of, video or something to get the word out there about what's going on. And I think that these are so important and crucial when society is looking at either massive tax expenditures toward a fraudulent version of science, or things that don't cost anything to provide, that we're not doing it. Like Larry was saying, we're not doing it. We're not creating communities. We're not creating supports. And those things don't cost money. And In some places, there are individuals and small communities that are doing it, but overall, we don't have it.
And we should spread the word
about
the
Paula Kaplan by chance? That's on the other line.
I'm sorry?
Is that Paula Kaplan on the other line? The third party involved here.
That was Amy talking about Paula Kaplan.
Yeah.
Amy, are you there?
Okay. Yes. Colorado, yes. Amy, be sure to say.
Colorado, Amy.
There's a number of Amys.
And the powwow on here.
So are we no longer on the blog spot? We're now talking just among ourselves.
Yeah, we're no longer live. So I just didn't want to cut off right at the end without really getting that kind of some back up. But I appreciate you all calling. And Rita, if you want, we can maybe organize something offline. And Amy, I think that your questions need to be answered. And Michael, I'd like to continue this conversation with you because, like Yvonne, there was a point in my life of where I bought it. And then there was a point in my life where I no longer bought it.
We need to have these conversations because other people are not asking these questions in the right type of way where people can start thinking. We have to start thinking and not necessarily just buying into everything that we're hearing. We need to question, to ask, and that's what happens. I mean, sometimes, I know for me, I just sometimes get frustrated that this is not crystal clear to other people, but we have to ask questions in a Socratic type of way. It's just like, you know, why is it okay for me to pray, but if someone else says God answers them back, why is that a problem? We have to ask questions.
Right.
Well,
it's
the subjectivity.
Well,
that's interesting because, I'm sorry, I just wanted to respond to that if I could, about the someone else. According to the teachers I had that taught me meditation, it leaves you open to everything on the other side. And what happens is you have to be able to discern which is a good influence and which is not. And you can actually tune them out, turn them off if they're not being helpful, if they're being negative. And that's a gift you have to get from a teacher who knows how to teach you how to do that. I'm a meditation teacher, and I've learned how to do that myself, and so I can teach it to other people. But few and far between people are able to teach it because very few people have mastered it. It's very difficult. A lot of them who claim to be are making a fortune off of it, and it's not certain whether they're really authentic or not. And you got to find a teacher who doesn't charge anything, who's doing it because they really want to help people and give something to society. It's hard to find that because people have to make a living. I'm a disabled veteran on Social Security and my veteran's pension. I don't have to make a living, so I decided to just give this away. And I don't do it very lightly. I do it just to people I'm sure will practice it in a non-abusive way. So everything can be abused. There's a positive and negative side to everything, and meditation is not an exception. So we really have to be very careful when we're dealing with these kinds of energies. It can turn on us if we're not careful.
I really appreciate all your sharing, and I'm looking forward to that show with you, Rita. And thank you for your service and your continued service.
Well, God bless America, and God bless the freedom of speech that allows us to do this.
That's right.
I'm so grateful for it.
And we need to keep talking. And so, again, if you have a tip that you'd like to call in, it's area code 718-273-8708, and that line is open 24 hours a day. We will be on again tomorrow night, continued conversations and critical examination of the state-sponsored organized psychiatric industries. So I'd like to ask everybody to keep on talking until I talk to you. Talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much, and God bless the work you're doing. All right, see you on Facebook, Lauren.
Bye.
All right, bye.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.